giving an introduction to Mathematica here in the SCI course. I'm an adjunct faculty member at the University of Guelph, and here at Perimeter, I'm Research Technology Group Lead. You probably all realize that these days, if you do research, it's not just blackboard and paper anymore, but technology has advanced, that you can use computers and other things to help you in research, not just to publish something with LaTeX or write emails, but actually also to help you manipulate equations and do many other things that computers may be good at. Yes?
Should we be taking paper lecture notes, or like, are you intending for us to follow you in MATLAB, in MATLAB?
So I am going to give the lecture in a bit of an interactive way, because I think that is best. I'm going to create a Mathematica notebook as we go along, and I'm going to upload that to the CyberKey later on, where you can look at. But this is just the notebook. Of course, everything I say will not be in the notebook. You're free to take notes. But if you're unfamiliar with Mathematica, then it may be better to follow any Mathematica tutorial. Mathematica is built in tutorials. They're available on the web, or you probably find them on YouTube as well. So I was going to talk about research and technology, and Mathematica is a prime example for that, of technology that can use to help you do something. So my field of research, I started out in astrophysics. I studied black holes and other systems numerically with computers, and then I slowly drifted over to computational physics, that is using computers, computational and numerical methods in other fields of physics as well, not just in astrophysics. That is how I came to be here at Perimeter. I'm the computational scientist in residence. If you have questions on numerical methods or computational methods, and they go beyond what you, the expertise you find in your research group, then you're welcome to try and ask me, and I'm going to try and answer the question for you. Let me try to start Mathematica. Now, this course here has a bit of a problem teaching it, because in high school and in typical undergraduate education, computational methods are basically not on the curriculum. Some of you will be interested in that, and you have a pretty good background then. Others have less experience, have a less opportunity to get experience, and that means I also have to cover the basics here. I'm trying to find a middle ground, but I'm afraid if you know everything, things may be a bit boring, and in this case, I want to ask you to help the others that need a bit more getting started with Mathematica. So let me get started with Mathematica here. You probably have it all installed off your notebook, on your notebook. Maybe you already, this is not what I wanted to do, started it. The screen will here. You click a notebook. Can you all see the screen? Is it large enough? No one complains. It probably is. You can create a new notebook. And then you can type arbitrary text into this notebook, for example, a title. Introduction to Mathematica. Subtitle. Psy course 2015. Subtitle. Just advertising myself. This is how you spell my name. Basic operations. Now, of course, it's just boring, right? Word could do that. You can also type expressions into Mathematica, 2 plus 3, and then you press shift return, not just return, and the answer is 5. And what happens here in Mathematica? Mathematica actually is a program that consists of two parts. There's the front end here that does all the look and the input and the output, and in the background, there's a second program running called the kernel that holds the internal state and that does all the calculations. You can use the kernel without the front end, and you can use the front end without the kernel as well. Now, 2 plus 3 is boring. You can also call functions. Square root of 4, for example, is 2. Square root of 2 remains square root of 2. You see that if you call a function such as square root, can you read that square root? It's a bit small, probably. You can just move one row to the front if you think it's too small. You're all hiding in the back. Functions use an uppercase first letter, and if you call a function, the arguments are in square brackets. That's Mathematica does something a bit strange there. I don't know why. You just have to get used to it. Square root of 4, of course, is 2. Square root of 2, of course, cannot be evaluated without making an approximation. So Mathematica just returns the expression unevaluated. It doesn't make any approximation by default. Instead, it gives only exact answers unless you ask it to make an approximation. In the field of if you want to use numerical methods, if you heard of numerical methods, some people do not like numerical methods because you can only get an approximate answer. And if you ask what is the square root of 2, you'd get as answer 1.4 something something. And if you see 1.4 something something, you don't know where it came from. You don't know that it may be square root of 2 or maybe the sine of something divided by something else. And that is a problem. So if you want to use numerical approximate methods, then you have to know exactly what you're doing to make sense of the results. If you remain with exact methods that are offered by Mathematica as well, then you don't have this problem because you see square root of 2 there. And if you want to evaluate it, then Mathematica, there's a cable down here, offers a function that is called n, n for numerical approximation. And then you see that there's a value called pi. Pi, of course, is pi. You can evaluate pi numerically. Yep. Then it's this. And if you want to know pi to 1,000 digits, then it's that. And of course, Mathematica can handle arbitrarily large numbers. For example, 10 to 100 plus 10 to the 101 is exactly like that. And you don't need to count the numbers. I believe that is accurate. This is just a fancy calculator with symbolic expressions. You also have variables. For example, you can write x plus 1. That is just x plus 1. You can assign a value to x, say x equals 2, then it's 5, and then x plus 1, of course, is 6, no problem. You can also undefine x again. The syntax is x equals dot. And if you saw, actually x changes colors. Did you see the change in color? It's a bit subtle. If you look at here, then this x is actually blue, and 6 is black because 6 is defined. And x is undefined. Are you sure you can read that? I find it a bit small. OK, very good. OK, I don't believe it. Let me try to increase that here a bit, just a bit. There must be a button. Do you know where that is? Some of you must know Mathematica.
Bottom right.
Bottom, thank you. Thank you. Very good. Let's try 150%. So now you can see the blue part here. There's a function called prime. See, if you type prim, it's blue. If you type prime, it turns into black. If you ask for the 1 millionth prime number, it's that. And Mathematica can also solve equations for you. Solve x squared.
What do you mean by x equals 1?
When I wrote x equals 5 up there.
Point.
Yes, yes, yes. But when I wrote x equals 5. Then I defined x, and if you write x plus 1, it's then 6, because x has the way 5. With x equals point, x becomes undefined. Oh, let me just try that out. And if you ask for the value of x afterwards, then it's just x again. X has no value anymore. And there's also a comment I'd like to make here. If you make assignments like this and use it later on, then the way they're evaluated, of course, is in chronological order, like on a blackboard when you write something down. And if you go back up again and change the value or re-evaluate something, then you can get a notebook that's not quite consistent anymore. As in a blackboard, if you write down something and then change a definition further down, it may seem inconsistent. With Mathematica, it's easy to get yourself confused. What you can do in that case is I mentioned there's a difference between the front end and the kernel. You can go to evaluation and quit kernel. And then Mathematica forgets all the things that you did. Of course, the front end remembers all the output, but now the front end looks like a Word document that you typed. And if you say evaluate notebook, then all the expressions top to bottom are re-evaluated, and then everything is self-consistent. Okay. Now, it's a bit difficult for me to judge whether this so far has been mostly boring for you, or whether this is all new and exciting. Probably something for everybody. Now, I wanted to talk about how to solve an equation. X squared plus 1 equals 0. We solve for x. And there are two solutions. Curly braces in Mathematica refer to lists. There's a solution with two lists. A list with two elements. And each element is again a list for all the variables, in this case only one variable. There's minus I and plus I, there are two solutions, of course. That must be a trick. What do the other lecturers do with the hockey stick here? You're not telling me. You didn't pay attention. Shame on you. Now, you can also calculate limits. Limit 1 over n. N goes to infinity is, of course. Pardon?
It's falling.
Thank you. It's not falling anymore. I'm just going to put it like this. That limit is, of course, 0. And you can also calculate a sum. Sum 1 over 2 to the n, n goes from 0 to infinity. What's that? Come on, you know that expression, don't you? It's 1, close, except it's 2 because I start counting from 0, not from 1. But yes, very good. Okay, these are basic operations, our proper basic operations. There is also, of course, a question mark operator. If you type question mark, square root, then you get a bit of a help. And if you click on the double roots, double arrows here, then a new window opens with much more information. All the help windows look approximately the same. There's a brief explanation, then examples and everything. But if you need to know all the gory details, they're hidden by default. That's that first line here, details that you can open. And then you get all the information about square root. Square root is probably pretty boring as an example. Let's look at something else, for example. Sum. Yeah, several different syntaxes for summing over some things. And if you look at the details, then you get all the information here. How it showed, what happens if you sum over multiple arguments, and so on. OK. I'm going to fairly frequently ask you whether you have questions. And at the moment, yeah, also asking you, of course, to interrupt me anytime you have questions. And this course will run for the full.
How did you open that window?
Pardon?
How did you open that window?
You click on the two right arrows here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're actually slightly blue like the click. And there's also a help menu item at the top. And you can open the documentation center. And that has a search box. So if you look for sum here, then you find several things. And the documentation has not just the reference manual for sum, it also has tutorials and introductions to various concepts. So if you know Mathematica, you're going to look at the reference manual. And if it's new to you, then going through some of the tutorials will be quite helpful. I mean, tutorial on how to use sum isn't that interesting. But tutorials on how to define and undefine variables, how to define and undefine functions, there are some fine points that may be interesting. Good, that is that. A proper function. I want to discuss functions now a bit. So let me open a new section. And when you write your own Mathematica notebook, then I recommend adding a few comments in there when you save it. It makes it easier for you later to get around. You mean functions?
Yeah.
OK, so the menu item is format. And you can choose a style. And there are the various styles, title, up to text, code, regular text. And this is, I'm using a Mac. You're probably using Windows mostly, unless you install Linux on it. Then it's probably something else. And for me, that's the I don't know, what's it called? Apple key, command key or something. And you probably have to use control or shift or something, plus the respective number to change the format of the respective cell. I've seen people give presentations in Mathematica where you type up nicely text, equations, pictures, and formula, and can just scroll through them. And then you can also show that interactively. You know PDF format, the portable document format? Wolfram produces CDF, the computable document format, which is essentially this, except there's some interaction available. You can't evaluate equations, solve equations or something, but you can have a picture, an image in there, and there could be a slider on it, and you can change the scale on the graph. You can zoom in or change one parameter. So it's quite a nice thing, but I haven't actually seen it much in practice. But it's convenient. So if you give a presentation at some point, and you have something that you want to show, instead of making a movie or a static plot, you can try, consider doing that if you're interested in this kind of technology. I think it has future. OK, this was variables and expressions. You can define functions. The syntax, again, is a bit unintuitive. Haven't seen it before. let's write f of x equals sine of x. This defines a function. The function is called f. Function has one argument, and you have to put an underscore here. We'll get to the underscore a bit later, why that is necessary. And you see that things change color, that x is a bit green here, because this x here does not refer to the x that we defined above. This x here refers to the x here in the function. And then, of course, the usual thing, right? If you evaluate x of 1, you get sine of 1. F of x is just f of x. And f of q just becomes sine of q. Nothing special here. F of 2 pi is, of course, 0. Let's define a variable, a. We said a equals to 1. Let's redefine f a bit. F is x plus a, then f is 1 plus x. That's a point to my moving so slowly. And f of 5 is then, of course, 6. Let's undefine a. Look at the color of a. At the moment, it's black. As soon as you undefine it, it becomes blue. And if we type f of 5, it still equals to 6. Let's define a different function with a slightly different syntax, with a double colon. Sorry, let me set a to 1 again. X plus a. Then g of 5 looks the same, it's 6. But if we undefine a now, then g of 5 is 5 plus a. I don't know whether you followed me through all these steps here. What I want to get at is the difference between defining a function with an equal sign and with a colon equal sign. What happens if you use an equal sign? Then the right-hand side is evaluated at this point. X is the function argument. A, I defined it to 1. The result is x plus 1. So this is the definition of the function. Down here, g of x, there's a colon equals x plus a. X plus a is not evaluated, except it's captured as is. And there's no output here. And then if you evaluate g of 5, it looks at this expression, x plus a. Since a is 1, the result is 6. If you undefine a, then g of 5 becomes 5 plus a, because the definition of g refers to the variable a, whereas the definition of the function f refers to the value of a that it had out there. That is a key, a rather important distinction. And it's difficult to explain that in a manner that is not too abstract. So I'm trying to give an example here. Does this make sense? In other languages, it may have maybe called quoting. Some of you nod. You probably knew that before. Some of you are busily typing. You may be baffled. Okay, let me go on. If you need to create a function, Mathematica makes the clear distinction between functions and the value of a function at a particular point. As a physicist, we often write f of x, and we don't make a distinction whether f of x denotes a function, and we just write f of x indicating that actually it's a function, not a variable, or whether we mean the value at the particular position x. And Mathematica makes a strict distinction there. There's a distinction between values and functions. For example, if I type 1, then it's a value. And if you write 1 ampersand, then you define a function, and that function is 1 everywhere. But it has a particular, it has an argument. So you can write 1 ampersand 3. That is, we take the value 1, we make a function of it that is 3 everywhere. Sorry, that is 1 everywhere, and then we evaluate it at 3. So, of course, the result is 1 again. We can create a function that doubles its argument. F of x equals 2x. We can also write it like this. This is an anonymous function. It's called anonymous because it doesn't have a name. So this is a function of one argument. The argument is referred to with this hash character instead of variable x, 2 times hash as a function. So as an example, can evaluate to a variable r, for example, and the result, of course, would be 2r. It's like writing f of r, it's also 2r. So this syntax here, 2 hash, and this syntax here, f of x equals 2x, they mean the same thing, except we don't choose a name for x, we use the hash character, and we don't give a name to the function. It's not called f, it's just this expression that we write here. I think I'm getting too abstract from seeing the blank stare here, so I'm going to skip on to the next topic then. Or do you have questions on that?
When would it be useful to use the hash and form?
It's useful if you have a function that just does a small thing, and you need a function for something, but you don't want to define a function. It's just smaller. It saves a bit of space. You can always give a name to a function if you're not familiar to that. Okay. Oh, there's one function, for example. Let me skip ahead a bit. You can define matrices, for example. And when you define a matrix with a particular size, then there's one way to define it where you give a function. And this function initializes, sets the value of the matrix given from whatever. You have a matrix with I and j, and then you have a function that sets the initial values. And let's say you have want to define a matrix that's 2 everywhere. Then you write it like this. This defines a 2-dimensional 4x4 matrix that's set to 2 everywhere. And you can also beautify it. Then it's easier to see. And you can have a different function here that, say, sets the values depending on I and j. You could write, well, let's not do that at the moment. Now, I showed you functions there and expressions and everything, and it's a bit black magic how that actually works. Mathematica lets you peek behind the curtains, and then you see how things actually look internally. That makes it easier to understand how things work. Let's take a particular expression, for example, a plus 2b plus 3c or something. Yes?
When you wrote the array expression up there, it's the 2 ampersand function know that how many variables it takes as arguments? Does it take I and j as arguments?
Yes, it takes I and j as argument, but if you write 2 ampersand, actually it doesn't know that. Good point. That's a detail I never looked at. You can write functions that take an arbitrary number of arguments, kind of take a list of arguments as arguments. If you're programming in C or C++, it's called var args. And I assume that the ampersand operator does something like that behind the curtains to make it work. That's a good point. I never thought about that. In that case, of course, you need a function of 2 arguments. So there's a function preform. And I may have used that syntax before. If you write an expression and then /, and then the name of a function, then it just applies to the function to that expression. So you could also write preform of and then that expression, square brackets. Sometimes it's just nicer to write the function after the expression. And actually, treeform is in blue because I misspelled it. I just see it. No, that was, oh my god, no. Hitting the wrong keys here. Yeah, if you try to do something interactive, you have to deal with that. So, treeform. And this shows how things look internally. So this expression, a plus 2b plus 3c, is represented in the following way in the kernel, in a tree. So the whole expression is a sum. There's a plus operator with 3 terms. One of the terms is a, another term is times, it's a product of 2 and b, and the third term is a product of 3 and c. And of course, you can use treeform for arbitrarily complex expressions, including functions and everything, and then you know how things are represented internally. Yes?
So in this case, plus function of an arbitrary number of variables.
Yes. So when you enter an expression into Mathematica, it does certain kind of normalizations automatically. If you type 0 times x, then that term will automatically be dropped. Or if you type 1 plus 2, it will automatically be combined to 3. Or 1 times x will automatically become x. And if you're at a plus b plus c, that's actually not two function calls for the two pluses, but it's one function call, as you mentioned, for arbitrary number of arguments. That, of course, is all described in the documentation if you want to know the details. But this, of course, goes into computer science, computer algebra systems, which are a hot research topic. But being able to look a bit behind the curtains is nice when you use Mathematica. Oops. Should I explain that a bit more? Yeah, you can also, if you don't like the graphical output, do that in textual form. A plus 2b plus 3c. It looks like this. There's a full form, which is the same as the tree form, except it's output in a list like this. So if you know Lisp as a programming language, this is basically how it's represented. So if you know a bit about computer science, there's a rather old and very powerful language called Lisp. And Mathematica is essentially a nice syntax sitting on top of the very same ideas as Lisp. So if there's ever a computer scientist talking down to you and telling you you should use Lisp because it's the best language ever, then you can reply, using Mathematica, it is Lisp, it just uses a different syntax that makes it easier to use for beginners and has a nice user interface. So it is important to have a very sound theoretical underpinning for a large project. Yes.
But I think don't computer programmers take bad interfaces as Mark Brad?
Well, there's full form, right? You don't need to use tree form. And you can also use the Mathematica kernel without the graphical user interface. And if you write a large program, that's actually the preferred way of doing so. So that's possible. I was going to show something about a bit of graphics, but since I showed you the matrix before, let me also show you how vectors and matrices are represented. I think that that's important. So curly braces, we saw them already. 1, 2, 3. This is a list or a vector of three elements. And you can add lists. 1, 2, 3 plus ABC is this. Or you can multiply them 2 times 1, 2, 3 is 4, 5, 6. You can apply functions to lists. Square root of 1, 2, 3 gives you this. Or you can apply a complicated function to a list. Complicated functions say 2x plus 1. Now I'm going to be lazy. I don't want to define that function. So I'm going to define an anonymous function, 2x plus 1. And I'm going to apply that to the list. And applying a function to a list is also called mapping a function over a list. And there's a special, well, let's write it out, map. So each element is treated with this function, 2x plus 1. So 1, 2 times 1 is 2, plus 1 is 3, and so on for the others as well. That's a very short and concise syntax. But of course, if you don't know what this means, then this becomes very difficult to read. So you have to be careful that you can use the syntax if you know Mathematica. But if you're new to Mathematica and get easily confused, then you wouldn't use this shortcut syntax form here. But you define the function explicitly. But the map command is rather important when you have vectors and lists and so on. Yes? Okay.
So this means that if we didn't use the map function, we wouldn't get that same result?
Let's try without the map function. This is a function, the first one, and we apply it to that list. No, it works out here. Certain functions automatically map over lists in Mathematica. Other functions wouldn't.
Well, I've just done exactly the same thing as what you did, as far as I can tell. And I've gotten like my numbers in a second set of curly brackets. Is there any reason why that's happened?
All right. You got brackets confused. Yes. Yeah. Okay. There's also a way to create a vector starting from an expression with an index, you say table, and for example, 2i plus 1, I goes from 0 to 3. This gives you a table, which is a vector, as you expect. You can have higher dimensional tables, 2D tables, which would be a matrix. 1 over I plus J. Which is now a 2D matrix. This is similar to the array command above, except I use the table. But there's an infinity in there. Let me add a plus 1 here. Now it looks better. And if you use matrix form, you get nicer output for vectors and matrices. And now it actually looks like this. And you may be familiar with MATLAB and all the linear algebra operations that are available in there. If you have matrices, you can calculate eigenvalues, solve linear systems, and so on. The same thing is implemented in Mathematica as well, except you can also use symbolic expressions. You can invert matrices that have x's in there, and so on. I'm not going to describe that. I mentioned earlier that I think you have very different backgrounds, so I rather want you to give you an overview about the internals of how Mathematica works, instead of describing in detail all the particular commands that you can be using. If you're interested in linear algebra or matrix operations, you probably want to look at a tutorial or at the help form, or if you get confused, ask myself in one of the tutorial sessions. But I don't want to go into all of the details here. Yes?
Is there a way to override the automatic mapping thing from input to?
There's a hold command. If you use hold, then you can prevent an expression from being evaluated. And later on, you can release it and evaluate it. But what exactly do you want to do if you say
well,
you
maybe
want to?
Instead of mapping my function to each index in the vector, I wanted to like multiply the vector as it all at once with just one input and then add one or whatever that means.
Yeah, so if you define your own operations, then you can do that. But the built-in operations, the built-in multiply and add, they have the property that they're automatically mapping. So Mathematica does not automatically map over lists, but certain operations, for example, square root or plus and times, they map automatically. That's just how they are defined. So what you're asking for doesn't make sense for the built-in operations.
So if I do
but
one,
if you have an arbitrary function that you're defining, and have a vector,
yeah,
then it would, what? There you go, see? What is, here, there, let's go. Then it just remains like this. And then you can also map it. And there's a shortcut for map, because map is an important function. So if you're working with lists and so on, you're going to use that a lot. And this is the difference. And then you see if you apply a function to a list, it's just applied to the list. Of course, nothing happens since I didn't define f. And if you map it over the list, then it's applied to every element.
So the default plus function, if I do 1 plus a vector, it adds 1 to each element of the vector?
Yes, that would be the definition of the default plus function, because that's what you usually want. There are other vector operations. For example, you can get the length of a vector. You can flatten vectors if you have a list of lists. For example, this is a 2x2 matrix. And if you flatten it, then you have just a single list, a vector, which then looks like this. Just takes all the elements together. Okay. So far, for a basic introduction to important concepts in Mathematica, there will not be any tutorial this afternoon, but tomorrow morning I'm going to introduce some more advanced features, for example, plotting or how to, I'll probably ask you what you want to do in Mathematica in case you don't have an idea. I'll have some examples. And then tomorrow afternoon into tutorial sessions, then we're probably going to split into two groups. my student Jordan Miller will also be there. And then if you're new to Mathematica, we can go through the basic steps and ensure you don't have any questions. And if you're advanced in Mathematica, then we can think of some cool things to do so that you don't get bored. Okay. Do you have questions on what we discussed this morning?
What is a double F, right?
If I just got confused. The single F. I defined a function that had a single F there, and whenever I applied it, it did something. It was probably identity function, so I don't recall how I defined it. And now I just use a different name, double F, to make sure I didn't define it. So this will also happen to you, that you use something and then it's defined and it's a different value and gets confusing. Did you have a question?
So how can you extract certain components of the matrix?
Ah, very good, yes. For that, you use square brackets, but double square brackets. So a 1, 2 is a vector. Let me just define it. Let's have a vector V, 1, 2, and have a matrix M. And this is the second element of the vector, which happens to be 2. And this is an element of the matrix that also happens to be 2. And you can also look at the zeroth element of the vector. This is just list. If you look at the tree form again, and you see this is how the vector is represented. It's just a list of 2 elements. And this indexing operator, the square brackets, they work on everything, not just in lists of vectors, also in arbitrary expressions. So if you have a complicated expression and you want to work on just a part of that expression, then you can use this indexing operator, the double square brackets, to pick out part of that expression and then do something to it. And here, for a list, of course, this is the first element, this is the second element, and the zeroth element says what it is, in this case, a list. If you write x plus y and get the zeroth element of it, then you get the plus. And the tree form becomes clear. X plus y is internally represented as this plus operation applied to the 2 elements, and the zeros gives you the plus operation, and you can do that for arbitrary.
So can you also extract some arrow or column of a matrix?
Yes, you can do that with columns and so on. If you have a matrix represented internally, it's a list of lists, so the matrix internally is a vector of vectors, and this is how you can index it.
How can you write a command?
Pardon?
How do you write a command to do that?
To what?
To extract maybe a column of a matrix.
Oh. This is how you get the column.
So I think that's rows. Row.
The row. Haha.
That's row. So that's
how you would do it.
That's column.
Now, in Mathematica, that is just fine. If you have a matrix that has a billion elements, and every operation is really slow, then you probably want to think about more efficient ways of doing that. But if you need to handle a billion elements, then you have other problems. And if you have just 1,000 or 100,000 elements in your matrix, then transpose and so on works just fine. So you don't need to be worried about efficiency.
If I do m double square brackets 0, 0, that gives me something called a symbol. What's that? 0, 0. No.
Ah, 0, 0. Zero. So actually, let's look how M is represented. So if you use one index, say M of 1, then you get this list. M of 1 and 2 gives you this element, and M of 0 gives you list. M of 0, 0 tries to look at the zeroth element of the list, which is not defined. And internally, list is a function, and this is represented internally as a symbol, and then you get symbol. So in your case, if you're interested in computer science, we can discuss that, but it's something that doesn't make sense. Because M of 1 is a column of the matrix, and M of 2 is a column, but M of 0 is not a vector. and therefore it doesn't make sense to use another index there. I think I showed you the self command earlier. That x squared plus 1 equals 0 comma x. There is also the symbolic expression. You can take derivatives and you can integrate. And that is the d command. For example, d of x squared comma x. D expects an expression and the variable and then takes the derivative. The derivative of x squared, of course, is 2x. Integrate 2x is the opposite, gives you x squared. And you can also calculate a definite integral. You can integrate 2x, where x goes from 0 to 1. And that, of course, gives you 1. That is boring. Let's do something else here. Or third, yeah, that is better. You can also solve differential equations, but of course now you're getting a realm where Mathematica cannot always produce an answer because it's difficult. If you have a differential equation of one argument, then you may have a chance of solving it. If it's a differential equation with two unknown, a partial differential equation, then it needs to have a very particular form to work. Dsolve is the expected command. F doesn't, okay. Let me just use FF again. So I would like to call the function F, but I did something wrong with F. Yes?
Can Mathematica handle differential operators? So like, for instance, suppose I wanted to compute the square of a differential operator. Do you know what I mean by that? Like say I had X multiplied by derivative with respect to X.
Yes.
And I wanted to compute the square, like,
the square of that.
Yeah, that. You see what I mean? So then that you have to.
Yes. You have to be careful with how you represent that internally, what it means to square that. It's easy to get yourself confused between, I mean, an operator is essentially a function that operates on other functions. It's easy to get yourself confused. I'll have to think about that a bit. I'll hope I have an example for that tomorrow, how to do that. But yes, it's obviously something important. So f of you need to write two equal sign here. A single equal sign would be an assignment. Two equal sign means equality. F of x equals x, and you solve for f of x, and the variable is 0. 2x. I need to use f.
Why can't you just clear it?
Yeah, I should just do that.
What is the equals dot supposed to represent?
It's just a shortcut for clear.
So why didn't it work then?
I don't know, maybe. It's because I'm sitting here in front of you that makes it, well, now it worked. Very good. Clear F removes all definitions of F. And now, F prime of X is a shortcut for D of F of X comma X. It's a derivative. And f of x equals x, and we solve it, then of course the solution is, there's one solution, f of x is x squared over 2 plus a certain constant that is not determined. You can give another initial values, boundary values, additional constraints, and the constant would actually be determined.
Does it mean by c squared bracket 1?
That just means it's a constant. Because you can add any constant to this solution, and it's still a solution. The differential equation?
It's just one.
There could be several constants if you have a second order equation. And but let's see whether it works. See? Now you have two constants. The solution is x cubed over 6 plus one constant plus x times the second constant. And now let me close with something that's a bit more confusing. Instead of solving for f of x, you can solve for x. And then the result is a function. So this syntax here, function of something that's very similar to the cross and the ampersand that I introduced. It's just a bit more explicitly written out. If you ask for f of x, Mathematica gives you a solution for f of x, should have that expression. If you ask for a solution for f, then it says the solution f, well, it's a function of one argument. I'm going to call that x. And the function has the value x squared over 2 plus c1, which is the same as we had above.
So since the constant is written letter and then followed by square brackets, does that mean it's technically like a function?
Yes, technically yes. But you can also have partial functions that are only defined at two points.
Right.
For example, OK, I'm going over time, but since the question I'm going to answer it, for example, you can say f of 1 equals 1, and f of 2 equals 3. And now you have a function f that is defined, but the function is unknown except at two particular points. So if I write f of 3, doesn't know what it is, but f of 2 is 3. And in this case, for dsolve, it's just one particular syntax that the developers of dsolve thought it would be nice to indicate how function, how constants should be indicated in the output. That has no particular meaning.
Mm-hmm.
OK. Do you have questions on what we talked about today?
Mm-hmm.
OK. If not, then I'll see you again tomorrow. And we'll continue with Mathematica, a bit of an introduction. And in the afternoon, there will be tomorrow, and then a tutorial about more advanced features or a hands-on tutorial to see that you can use it on your laptop. See you tomorrow.
But I don't know if you realize this, but like, our class is scheduled to go till 12. I mean, you're welcome to end early, but maybe you can fit in another 45 minutes if you want.
Okay, maybe what was that? I'm sorry. I was confused about the clock. I was told it was 75 minutes.
Okay.
And we are only at, of course, 45 minutes, not 75 minutes. Okay.
If you're all done, that's fine.
No, I'm not done. There's a lot of things I want to go through. I was just afraid I was going over time. Man, this is embarrassing. Apologies. Let's continue. Okay, 2 minute break. Okay, we went about the differential functions a bit quickly. Do you have questions on that? Should we expand?
Can we give boundary value conditions?
Yes, you can. And for example, so you would just add them to the equations that you're solving. So here this, no, let's take this example up here. Let me just copy to the bottom. And if you have a list of equations, then you put that into curly braces like this. The first argument is equations. And then you can add a second one. For example, you say f of 0 should be 42. What? No assignment, right? You have to be careful. That would be an assignment. You don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this, and the constant has vanished. And we can also give a second boundary value. F of 1 should also be 42. And the result then is? Oh, no. I fooled myself again. And it could not find a solution. So the result of dsolve is always a list of solutions. And in this case, it's the empty list, because dsolve could not find any solution. Clearly, it's a first order differential equations, and they're giving two constraints to boundary values. Of course, they need to be consistent. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Now, you could give two boundary values that happen to be provide the same information. Then it would actually work. What I kind of glanced over is how to manipulate expressions. Let's take at x plus 1 times x minus 1. We looked at this before. If Mathematica gets its hands on it, it sorts the variables just to give it in a normal form. First all the numbers, then all the variables. What you can do with this term, you can simplify it. Then it finds that this is minus 1 plus x squared, which is certainly a simple form. But in many simplified, it's kind of an art to simplify an expression. Sometimes something simpler comes out. Sometimes it doesn't work. You can take, and you can factor it, that is the opposite. You can expand it, and that will take any factorized thing and expand it back out. And simplify will essentially take something in between, whatever it thinks it's most simple, between the expanding and factorizing. You can collect certain terms, say x plus y plus 3, and we collect, say, in y, and then the result will be nicely sorted by y. There's a term here in the beginning that is independent of y, then all the terms that depend linearly on y, and then the last term that depends quadratically on y. You can do series expansions. Let's take 1 over x and expand it. That means we expand in x. We expand around x equals 1. And you want a fourth order expansion, polynomial expansion. And this is the result. The four terms that I'm asking for, plus this constant, this O, x minus 1 to the fifth, meaning there are other terms that are actually dropped. And there's a particular way to get rid of this O term. I don't recall what it is. Let's look at the documentation. It should say something like normal or normalized. Here, this one. If you call normal on it, then it would become a regular expression and not have the special series format. Factorize free form. Okay. Okay. I'm also going to show you how to do graphics. Mathematical, there's plotting utilities built in. In the simplest form, this is just plot sine of x. X goes from 0 to 2 pi. Of course, you know how this looks like. It's a sine function. This is a basic plot. You can make it look nicer by giving additional options. And if you look at the plot documentation, you'll find that it's probably 100 pages with all the options and different things and graphics, what you can do here. So let's write a frame around it. Frame true. And make frame black. And what? Background should have a particular color. 08091. You can give colors by saying how much they should be red, green, or blue. And then you have a nice tinted bluish background for the plot and so on.
I just want to ask a question from the series.
Sorry for being too quick. Yes.
So x 1 4. What does the 1 and 4?
So x means expanding x, obviously. 1 means around x equals 1. And 4 means go up to fourth order. And series doesn't return a regular expression. It returns something that has a rather rigid format, and you have to call normal on it to get a regular, to get an expression out of it that you can then continue to manipulate. And you see that Mathematica reordered it. There is 2, x squared, quartic term, and then the linear term. It's just because Mathematica reorders expressions. So don't be confused by that. And of course, you can do 3D plots. You can plot many different things, right? Lines, points, and so on. Just give a brief example. Plot 3D. What should we plot? Sine of x, cosine of y, x 0 to pi, y 0 to 4 pi. And then it looks like this. And you can make the plot a bit larger if you want. You can interact with it, look at it from all sides. And that's, of course, a nice thing to do if you have a numeric solution but don't understand something. Yes?
Can you go back to the cities?
Yes. I think I'm moving much too fast here, right? You need to tell me that we should be slower.
If I want to define x minus 1 equals some epsilon and one mathematical displayed in terms of epsilon, how do I do that?
I didn't quite understand that. You have what?
If I define x minus 1 to be some new variable.
X minus 1?
Yes. To be some...
Okay.
One method.
So you want to say you have 1 over x. Okay, you have 1. One minus x should be epsilon.
Yeah.
You can solve that for epsilon. That is this. This is the definition of epsilon. Let's take the first value of that. Then we take 1 minus x and apply the definition of epsilon.
One.
Sorry, we need to define for x, for epsilon. Otherwise, it would have been trivial, right? The solving wouldn't make sense. And then we apply the definition of x, and then this is the result that we get. And then what would the series... And that would be the result. And if you want... Okay, I'm confusing myself here. I think I'm not answering the question, am I? Let me remove what I did and ask you again. You want to define a new variable epsilon that is x minus 1. Okay, so let's take this one here. And since this epsilon is x minus 1, we write epsilon plus 1. Is this correct? And then we would expand like this.
But suppose
and
I wanted
that
to
do so much that
after getting the expression for x, I just wanted to rewrite it in terms of epsilon.
Okay, so you want to take this one here. Okay, let's give this a name. Let's call this expression. And then you can, it's called a replacement. With slash and dot, you can give a rule, and the rule is a pattern that defines how to replace something. For example, you can say x goes to epsilon plus 1. And if you do this, then this is the result. This is something I didn't mention, because it's a bit more of an advanced topic, but it's apparently important. So let me discuss it anyway. Mathematica, the foundation of the language, how things are evaluated, is based on pattern matching. So functions are applied if they match a particular pattern. You can define patterns, and if the pattern matches, it's replaced in a particular way. If you write f of x equals x squared, then technically this here is a pattern, and the pattern has a name x. And if you later write f of x, then whatever is in the square brackets is matched again this pattern. This pattern here has no constraint. It's just an underscore with the name x. It will always match. So x will be assigned to that. And this is how the function internally is evaluated. And you can, if you want, also put constraints on pattern. For example, you can say that x must be integer. And then f of 2 is 4, and f of 2.1 remains f of 2.1. Because 2.1 doesn't match that pattern, because it matches only integers. There's a whole language subsections on how to define pattern and do different cases and so on. So if you have do list manipulations and complicated things, that can be highly useful. But at the moment, let's just do the regular thing. So you can also write this as a pattern. x goes to x squared. And then this is a pattern. Let's put it in parentheses. And then let's write the arbitrary expression, for example, 2, and then this replacement rule, and then you get 4. This is the same way as we did with the function above. If you write f of 2, then this is what happens internally. It takes the value 2, and it takes this particular pattern, matches it against 2, then x becomes 2, and then evaluating x squared becomes 4. And you can also do this in a more complicated expression. For example, let's take the expression from above, from the series. And then let's write a pattern that that x minus 1 becomes epsilon. And then everywhere where you see x minus 1 in the expression, it's replaced by epsilon. But it has to be x minus 1. You see, here you have 2 minus x that is not replaced because it doesn't match that particular pattern, because it doesn't look like x minus 1. To be a bit careful there.
Yes. How do you find complex roots? Does factor do that? So I was trying to factor here.
Square root of 2 gives you only one root.
Right. So if you
there's a function for that. Let me just look at square root and the documentation. And at the bottom, there's further reading. And there's third. Third is the function. Gives the nth root of something.
But if I just want to factor a polynomial and it happens to not have all real roots?
You want
like
factor
you factor, yeah.
X squared, for example?
Well, x squared plus 1, say.
Right. There you go, and it gives you only one definition. Yes. So let's look at the factor documentation. It's this extension thinking that you need to do. But by default, since Mathematica C is only real coefficients in x squared plus 1, it assumes you want something in the real numbers. But you can write extension goes to I, and then it actually
perfect.
Does that.
Okay, thanks.
So Mathematica has many of these things built in. And I, of course, only know a small fraction of it. So the documentation is your help here. Now here, I mean, this brief text probably didn't tell you much how to do that. But if you go to the real documentation, there may even be an example for factor how to do that. Is there? Modulus? I don't know. There's probably an example that tells you how to do that, how to deal with the extension.
And so if I have a series in epsilon to some order and I want to say, okay, I just want it to second order. Is there a way to do that?
Let's look at the expression here again. You can do it like this. You just take the series and expand it again. Or if you didn't normalize the series, I mentioned earlier that if you expand something in a series, you get a particular rigid structure out, and you have to call normal on it to turn that in a particular expression. In that rigid structure, all the series coefficient are actually nicely separated. Let's do that again. Series, what was it? 1 over x. This is my, let's call this ser as in series. And let's look at the tree form, then we maybe see. So the result from a series expansion is called series data, where it remembers all the things. Remember, you expanded in x around 1, all the coefficients it calculated are those coefficients. And I don't know what these numbers are, it's probably something internal. And this is just how it's displayed. And you can, for example, ask for a series coefficient. And this is then the second coefficient of the series. But of course, something else worked. You have the fourth order expansion up to fourth order. You just call series again up to second order, and then it will, of course, implicitly drop the additional orders. But there's a more elegant way by using the series data and series coefficient instruction and so on. Yes?
How is the O order function represented? Like
internally?
Yeah.
It's represented this way. So internally, if you expand a series, it calculates a series data structure. And the O is probably just this 5 here. And it's just if a series data structure is displayed by default, it looks like something that people can read this particular form, minus 1 plus x cubed or something that we had further up. That this tree structure needs too much space. Then it looks like this. But this is actually just the series data structure as it's displayed. This is one of the differences between the kernel and the graphical user interface. The kernel has its data structures, and there are many ways of displaying something. There's the tree form, there's the full form, there's the normal form that is normally used, but there are many other forms where you can influence the output. For example, square root of 2, this is an input form. That's the same expression in output form, and you can convert between that. This would be the input form. Normal form, there's a traditional form where the square root looks slightly nicer, and so on. And if you go to format, is it format? No, it's the cell. Here you see all the additional forms that you can have. And raw input form corresponds to full form, then you see exactly what's going on. And if you have some output and you don't exactly know how to interpret it, then you can change the output and actually look at the details. Sometimes it's useful to do that. And yeah. Also, if you write expressions like this with square root, and you don't like to have square root because you like the expressions to look more nicely, maybe you want to do it for a paper and so on, then you can go to normal form, and then it looks like this. And that, of course, works the same way. So this square root of here is now an input field that I can manipulate. Do you have a question? We are just relaxing. OK. More questions on series input, output? Good. The last example that I wanted to show today is, yes?
About plotting, can you plot a level set of a function? This is something I've always wanted to do.
A level set function. So you have a function and you want to plot where the function intersects a plane, for example.
I want to just plot its level set, so like where it equals a fixed value.
Oh, contour lines.
Lines.
Yes.
Contour lines, sure.
Let's see whether that is. That would be a contour plot.
What if I just want just one line where it equals a fixed value?
You can do that. You can give additional options. I don't know what the options are actually called, but of course it does the shading. You can remove the shading. And you can actually define the levels. And in this case, of course, the levels are boring because the zero levels, of course, are just these ones here, the horizontal lines. So it would be rather boring. But you can define the levels where you want to see things.
Can you do it in higher dimensions?
In higher dimensions.
Then contours aren't as reasonable, but a level set is still
possible. No, it does. It does. A good question. I don't know that either.
Like
but in volume rendering, you often have that, right? You have some function, say, that lives in 3D. I mean, if you want to plot higher than 3D, you're probably out of luck. You probably have to project it to 3D in some way before you can actually plot it. But it makes sense. And then you define a particular level set, and then you plot it. So in volume rendering, that is a standard thing. But I don't know how to do it in Mathematica. Does anyone of you know how to do that?
Sorry, is volume rendering a program?
No, volume rendering is a particular algorithm in computer science for do something. So it means if you have volume data, 3D data, say the value for every voxel, how to actually display that. And it may come out of a simulation, say you have the wind speed at every point, and it's difficult to visualize that because you plot something that then you would see only from the outside. You have to be somehow translucent to do something. And this level set plotting, that is one method where you just pick a particular level set and then you get some surface or something. For example, if a brain scan or something or an MRI or something, and then you detect a particular transition and say, oh, that's the surface of the bone, and that's what you want to plot. So it's definitely possible. I don't know how to do it in Mathematica.
So if you do a replacement with x underscore, that's equivalent to making a function definition?
It's internally, they work very similarly. If you define a function, then it also has a name for it. But a function internally is very different, very similar to a replacement rule. And the replacement rule had this particular syntax with the arrow.
But if we replace x underscore, then whatever comes before it is like.
So, okay, you have to, there are two differences. You have this rule, which replaces x by y. So you have to find x explicitly in an expression. Okay, let's write that expression. 2x, x squared plus x. And then let's apply this rule. And this replaces x wherever it appears by y. So we get y squared plus y. And there's a different rule that we can write, where we write it like this. An underscore is a pattern that matches everything. That means everything is replaced by y. And you can also write it like this. That's not much different. It's the same pattern, except the pattern has now a name. And then you can refer to the pattern here and say it goes to x plus 1 or something. And then if you replace x by x plus 1, you is that correct? I don't know. Complicated. Let's write it like this.
That replaces the entire.
Yes. So the first thing that matches, of course, is the whole expression, which is then replaced by y. And this is like writing a function where we write f of x is y. And then we apply this function to x squared plus x. And of course, the result is y, because the function always gives y as a result. So this would be the second pattern. And therefore, this pattern is very similar to to that function definition. But the way they are applied are slightly different. The function definition you have to explicitly call, right? You write f of something. Whereas when you do pattern matching, there's this slash dot syntax that kind of applies it not only to expression, but also looks at the particular sub-expressions. So it actually looks at all the parts, all the details that appear here, and everywhere it finds an x in there, it's replaced by y. Function application would not work that way. So, yeah. Okay, I think I got off on the wrong foot with explaining pattern matching. That was a bit confusing. Maybe I'll try to repeat that tomorrow and start in a bit more structured way if you didn't understand that. Apologies for that. You had a question?
About the plotting level sets or whatever, if you region plot 3D will give you any, you give it a Boolean for whether you want to plot a point or not, and then it plots the whole volume that satisfies the thing.
So how does this continue?
I think you would give it in the first argument like that equals C. Like you, because you want to plot. Well, in this instance, the level sets are going to look two-dimensional, so it's not
range specification.
You wouldn't use the 3D one.
No.
So the first argument you want.
Okay, I have never used region plot. We would have to look at the documentation to find that out. Sorry, what was this before? It was contour plot. Okay. So after this plotting, I also wanted to show how recursive functions or functions can be defined recursively. Let me. Everybody uses the factorial for that. But let's do the same way. If we define the factorial of 0, of course, to be 1, and the factorial of n, n is a pattern, is n times the factorials of n minus 1. Sorry. What of course happened here right now is that Mathematica tried to evaluate the right-hand side, and the right-hand side contained factorial and so on, so this doesn't work. You have to prevent it from evaluating the right-hand side. I have to use this syntax here with colon equals. And then I can look, ask for the factorial of 10 or 100, and everything works fine. Now I want you to think with me and help me define another function, the so-called Fibonacci function. This has to do with adding, not with multiplying. The Fibonacci function of n is the sum of the Fibonacci function of n minus 1 and n minus 2. So Fibonacci of 0, traditionally defined at 0, of 1 is defined at 1, and at n is defined as n minus 1, n minus 2. And then you can look at this, that's 55, that's easy. 100, oops, what happens here? Each time the Fibonacci function is evaluated recursively, it needs to evaluate twice as many. So to get Fibonacci of 100, it's 99 plus 98. To 99, it has to evaluate 98 plus 97, and so on. So this now internally does something like 2 to the 100 operations. Mm-hmm. And 2 to the 100 is about 10 to the 30. That's a very large number. So this actually can't work. I have to abort Mathematica and have stop that here. Now Fibonacci numbers, first just adding something that is fairly primitive, and of course you have no interest in doing that. But if you define your own structures at some point, lists or algebraic structures or something, then they are often easily defined in a recursive way, where you have a complex case and you reduce this to a more simple case. And the optimization technique that I'm about to show you is then very important. It's called memoization, that can help you circumvent that problem. You have a question?
My question was probably about that. I remember seeing at some point evaluate them in ascending order and then store them so it didn't have to calculate them for each time.
Yes,
right.
But there's a much simpler way to do that in Mathematica,
yeah.
Where you write it like this, and then this is this, and here you're done. And you want to go to 1 million. Oh no! Yeah, there's a recursion limit built in. You can increase the recursion limit if you know that it's safe. This is just Mathematica making sure that you don't accidentally do something strange. Now let's look at this expression here, because this is clearly the strange thing here, where you define Fibonacci equals, and then you define it again, and then you actually define it. What happens here? The technique is called memoization. That the word memo is the same as in memory, where Mathematica remembers something. So every time you evaluate it, the Fibonacci function for something, it actually remembers it. And what happens here, if you call this function here, remember the right-hand side will just be stored internally. Mathematica doesn't look at it when you write this function. But if you evaluate Fibonacci of 10, then it will actually evaluate this expression here. It will evaluate it. And this is then a definition of a function. So after evaluating Fibonacci of 10, it will add a new function definition internally that contains the Fibonacci value of 10. And then if it needs it a second time, it doesn't need it. So Fibonacci of 100 plus Fibonacci 99 plus Fibonacci 98, and 99 requires 98 again. So before it was evaluated twice, and with this, the first time it's evaluated, the second time there's a function definition where it can be just looked up. Yes?
Does it also store in the memory the data it gets during evaluation, for example, when you aborted the computation and it got, let's say, to Fibonacci of 35? Does it store number for Fibonacci?
Yes,
yeah?
Yes, it would.
So not only the final answer, but also all the intersteps?
Yes. So So before I was unable to do Fibonacci 100 because it takes much too long, and now I can go up to 1,000. And this 1,000 actually now happens so quickly that you probably won't be able to abort it. The long thing here is actually displaying the 1,000 numbers. The kernel is ready much more quickly. The kernel, I assume, will be ready in a few, whatever, 10 or 100 milliseconds or something. But displaying it could take longer. Okay. So this particular trick, memoization, is probably also explained in the Mathematica documentation somewhere. It's a useful thing to remember. Or if you don't remember the trick, remember that there is a trick. You can then look it up and ask someone if you have some recursive definitions. And here, we used integers and adding it up. Of course, it's a trivial example. In the end, they can explain the same trick. If you define certain sets and want to order the sets, so define them and build up some more complicated structure where you want to do something. Okay, I'm looking at the clock again. I was told the lecture should be 75 minutes. We started at 10:30, and I hope I'm not cutting it short now. Do you have more questions?
Yeah, just one more thing. With which command did you abort the calculation before?
That's not a command, because that has to do with the user interface. There's this evaluation menu here. And there is, here, it's grayed out currently because nothing is running. It's abort and evaluation, which for me is command and dot.
It's
so for you it's something,
it's,
is, pardon?
All
it's probably all dot. And Windows, I don't know, command dot maybe or something.
Plus doesn't mean plus.
Also all dot. Anyway, you can just, of course, also use the menu item. It's now grayed out, but if something is running, you can just click it here. If you have no further questions, then I will see you tomorrow. Apologies for trying to cut you short earlier.